Okay, 3, 2.
3, 2, hit it!
It's time to double down with Max and Stacy on Sputnik Radio. Coming up on the show, we talk to Chris Cook, former energy market regulator. But first, as always, it's time to hear from Stacy with the hottest headlines of the day.
Hey, Max. Well, it has been a pretty exciting few months. Not only have we had pandemic and market crashes and market rallies, historic in nature. Of course, we've also seen for the first time negative oil prices, but even the energy sector as well, including natural gas. We see a lot of, well, you know, volatile situation, I might say. Just in the past week, here's two headlines from the mainstream financial press. Jerusalem Post says Iran sent a flotilla of 5 tankers of fuel to gasoline-starved ally Venezuela in May, and Tehran has said it will continue the shipments if Caracas requests more, despite Washington's criticism of the trade between the two nations, which are both under U.S. sanctions. So, I mean, that's looking like it could erupt into a hot war situation in the Caribbean. And Deutsche Welt is reporting that Nord Stream 2, Germany unhappy with new U.S. sanctions. Berlin says it regrets a U.S. plan to expand sanctions on the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline. U.S. senators announced new sanctions on the project last week, saying the pipeline would boost Moscow's influence in Europe.
Right. Well, you know, this is a continuation of deglobalization, right? So when Trump became president, he said he wasn't interested in globalization. He's more interested in America first and deglobalization. The leadership over in China said actually they were more interested in globalization, and that was an interesting debate point for a while. But now we see the results of all this playing out in the energy patch. So you've got Germany now looking like it is in play, as we would say on Wall Street. Who will Germany really form an alliance with? They've been in American camp for a long time. Iran, Venezuela, of course, always nipping at the heels of the U.S. empire. Looks like they are gaining traction in their secession from the American empire. So, yeah, 2020 looks like your U.S. dollar loses world reserve currency.
Well, we do seem to be in a global paradigm shift. And when the Thucydides trap, of course, is when the rising power starts to threaten the declining power, we could be in one of those situations. But also energy and control of energy market is also super important in that situation. Many say that oil and all carbon energy sources like natural gas are yesterday's news, and that is not the future, that we're going to have almost unlimited energy thanks to solar and wind power and all these renewable energies, which are getting apparently better, or at least the price of solar is collapsing. But in terms of energy, you know, we did see also Saudi Arabia basically starting to sell off Saudi Aramco. So are they also predicting a post-carbon energy source world? Well, you know, to help us make sense of this, we have former regulator Chris Cook on the line. And Chris, I want to actually talk to you, since you are an energy market regulator, about the absence of regulation in the U.S. oil market. We saw the WTI contract go negative just a few weeks ago. And we've been wanting to really talk to you about that because it was tied to an ETF. And that ETF was piled into by very, very retail investors. These were people that just had like $500 to invest, but they piled into USO, an ETF in the United States. And apparently that one ETF held well over 20% of all futures contracts rolling over for that month. Is there something that regulators should have done to prevent a negative oil price? What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think if that had happened when I was the chief regulator of the International Petroleum Exchange's deliverable gas oil contract, I would have been sacked and the boss of the exchange would have been sacked for that. That's how bad it was. It was not actually down to the USO. USO, in fact, rolled out of the contract a good couple of weeks before expiry. But there were people in the contract who had no business whatever to be in that contract anywhere near expiry. And I made it my business when I was a regulator managing deliveries that nobody in that position could come within a long distance of making of making deliveries. There are also thoughts that there might have been trading games going on. Maybe oil was actually being delivered that was not in the ownership of those who people thought it was. It gets quite technical at that point. But the fact is, the exchange should never have allowed this to happen. All those contracts probably in the last 2 days should have been busted and should have been settled at a settlement price, a bit like the way that the tin crisis was settled in 1985 by a what they called a ring out price. In my view, the exchange was completely at fault there, and whoever was in charge of regulation there should not actually have survived that. That's how bad it was. It's the worst thing I've seen in 20 years, in my opinion.
Right. Another example of market fundamentalism, the idea that all prices are from God and that there, you can bet your bottom dollar that life is cheap. So anyway, Chris Cook, talking about oil prices here, do you think oil prices will hold, or is this just a dead cat bounce? Do the OPEC plus members, what do they do from here?
Well, I don't think OPEC members have had anything whatever to do with oil pricing since about 2001. When Wall Street and the Intercontinental Exchange platform essentially took over oil price formation. That's my view for at least 16, 17 years. And subsequently, the mechanism has changed. But in my view, the US, towards the end of last year and early this year, literally have been able to peg the dollar against oil. And this is a mechanism that has been put in place probably between $50 and $60, you know, a bit like the Hong Kong dollar peg, not dissimilar to that. Then along came COVID and the demand shock. And the problem there was, since then, there has been no physical market. People don't understand this. 30 million barrels a day of product demand dropped out of the market. There was a forward market. That's the one that's traded on exchange. People are trading forward, and that essentially is betting on the forward price. But there was no physical trading essentially possible because the market seized up entirely, and people, if you like, the physical oil could only be stored. And you touched earlier, I think, Stacey, on Iran as well. Iran typically has no spare gasoline to export. What happened in Tehran was nobody was driving cars. The refineries were pumping out gasoline and basically awash with gasoline. So what could they do? They exported it. Now you will find that actually Iran doesn't have anywhere near as much spare gasoline. So I doubt whether they'll have that much to spare for Venezuela, but they can probably buy from somebody else. So, you know, the market essentially died. It still is not back together again. And this is where it gets really interesting. I believe that the Chinese, you see, who was it was buying all of these bargains that were going when the price plunged? Well, it's quite simple. Chinese have about 200 tankers, which have essentially taken oil bought in April, end of April, early May, and are busily carrying it to the Far East. It's an immense amount of oil they've taken. They have 1.2 billion barrels of oil stored, plus maybe a couple of hundred million barrels, which they will be in a position to deliver. In my view, the Chinese have taken action to essentially cap the oil price at or around $40. So I think that rather than the sell side being in control of the market and controlling it, supporting it between $50 and $60, what we're now seeing is a fundamental shift downstream to market control by China. And there's an even more interesting wrinkle to that. But anyway, I've said enough so far, but I could speak for some time on this.
Well, the biggest introduction, the biggest cause of chaos, I would say, over the past decade in the energy patch has been United States fracking resources, whether it's natural gas or oil. Of course, the innovator, the company that invented and revolutionized fracking for the natural gas industry, Chesapeake, is about to go bust. Of course, that ties in with the story about USO and oil, people in that market that didn't know what they were doing. But in terms of this Nord Stream 2 and COVID, You know, when the United States started building all this LNG capacity, the liquefied natural gas, because it's very difficult to transport natural gas over great distances, like across the sea. So it's a very expensive process to liquefy it, put it into a tanker and send it to Europe. In this case, that's what the United States plans to do. But when they planned on all these multi-billion dollar LNG terminals, you know, there was a huge difference in price in natural gas between the United States, Europe, and Asia. You know, the United States producers could get many, many multiples more in Europe and Asia. So now that price is now evened out. It's basically the same all over the world. And does it even make any economic sense to plan on sending, like liquefying this natural gas and sending it to Europe? Is that going to be even possible economically?
Well, you're quite right. The energy cost of transferring gas is high, whether you liquefy it or if you pump it. If you pump it thousands of kilometers, you have very, you know, it's quite a high cost of pumping, of compressing the gas long distances. So you're absolutely right, Stacey. There is quite a high cost of shipping it from the US Gulf to Europe. And the Russians will point out that the cost of delivering to Germany, they can actually undercut the US prices by maybe 30%, because their gas has not got anywhere near as far to go and doesn't make anywhere near as much in the way of losses. But of course, what we're seeing here is the Trump policy of energy dominance. Molecules of US freedom, you will recall. That's what these are. And essentially, it's essentially mafia diplomacy. It's got nothing to do with anything other than the US mandating or forcing the Germans to buy. In fact, the Nord Stream pipeline increases the energy security of Germany and other countries on the network, because, you know, it's not subject to the games that go on in disputes between Ukraine and Ukraine and Russia. I mean, nothing to do with Putin turning off the tap for anything other than commercial reasons. It was a dispute between oligarchs, no more, no less. You know, so it actually increases Europe's energy security. And I've never seen a more cynical commercial. It's mafia diplomacy, is what it is. And no wonder the Germans are really, you know, pissed off about it. Pardon my language.
Right. Well, it seems like the U.S. is pushing Germany into the arms of Russia. Chris, what do you think?
Well, yes, if you like. I mean, but, you know, this is just business, Max. Business spelled B-I-Z-N-I-S. It's nothing to do with politics. It's energy security. And I don't think it's anything more than that. If you recall, through the Cold War, the Soviet Union reliably supplied oil and gas to the West, and they reliably paid them. So there's nothing new about this supply. It's just the ultimate hypocrisy from the US at the moment, pretending this is actually a political thing when it's purely business.
Okay, Chris, in the last few moments here, can you tell us what you think about renewable energy sources, including especially solar, which China kind of dominates there? They also have a more advanced nuclear power stations. Do you think that's going to displace enough of the oil patch? Is that why Saudi Arabia sold off some of their Saudi Aramco?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely right. The reason, it's what Yamani said, that the oil age, the stone age didn't end for lack of stones, and the oil age isn't ending for lack of oil. The fact is that the price, when it reaches $60, it's too expensive for people to buy, you know, and people start actually, substituting. So you're absolutely right. The cost of solar is declining. It's now way down under $60 a barrel. It's probably equivalent of, you know, $15 or less. But then, electricity won't replace everything that you need. I mean, you need mobility, you know, transport. You won't get electric powered jet planes for very soon, for instance, or massive super tankers. But yes, it is substituting for a great deal of what you might call energy as a service, you know, heat, cooling, mobility, and services like that.
Well, there's no substitute for Chris Cook. He's always got the inside dope on the energy patch. And that's going to do it for this episode of Double Down with me, Max Kaiser, and Stacey Herbert on Sputnik Radio. I'd like to thank our guest, Chris Cook. Until next week, bye, y'all.